This podcast episode contains discussions surrounding sexual assault. If you've been affected by the issues mentioned, phone numbers and websites that can support you will be made available in the show notes.
On September the 9th, horrific reports of a rape in Lahore in the province of Punjab rocked Pakistan to its core.
The reaction from the police, the media, and the country's citizens revealed a great deal about the toxic rape culture that pervades Pakistan today.
With us, we have a panel of guests to talk about what's happening and what can be done about sexual assault in Pakistan and around the world.
Welcome to this episode of the Meridian Podcast. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Meridian Podcast.
Hey, you all right?
Yeah, I'm not bad, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. I'm good. Sort of things changing again, returning to lockdown in Scotland, but, you know, needed.
Yeah, I can imagine it's only so long until we'll probably have to film an episode corona-related, which is not
cool. Yeah, we've been trying to avoid planning one, but it's going to become hard, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, yeah, everyone, welcome. Today we're going to be talking about an article published on the Meridian Magazine's website. We'll get into, obviously, the contents, the title of all of that. But I'm really pleased to say that we are, in fact, joined by the writer of that article, Anmol Irfan. Anmol, would you like to just introduce yourself to the listeners first?
Yeah, first of all, thank you so much for having me. It means a lot
to
discuss this topic here. I'm Anmol. I'm a freelance writer and journalist, and I'm also the founder of Perspective Magazine, which is a feminist online platform that explores Pakistani society and champions unheard stories within the country.
Hi, I'm Asya. I'm one of the editors for the Asia section at The Meridian, and I'm also a freelance journalist and a student.
Hi, everyone. I'm Ahan. I'm from Karachi, Pakistan. I'm also an editor at The Meridian, and I try to be a freelance journalist.
Lovely, don't we all. The article that we're going to be talking about today, Anmol, is called Women Are Not Safe in Pakistan, Here's Why. Anmol, in a couple of sentences, what's your answer to that question?
Well, it's going to be hard narrowing that down to a couple of sentences, but essentially, at least the way I see it, it's that we aren't allowed to exist without someone telling us how to do it. And I think that encompasses a lot, which I'm sure we'll go into more detail about. But yeah, that's how I would narrow it down.
So speaking of going into more detail, could you sort of give us an outline of the incident that you write about in your article and sort of give us the background about what happened?
So what happened was around a month ago, I believe September 9th, which is exactly a month ago, actually, from today. There was a woman driving with her children on Ring Road, Lahore, which is a road that's been built on the outskirts of the city. And I'm giving these details because they do get relevant later. And she was her car stopped, whether it was an engine problem or out of fuel. We're still unclear on the details. But she called the police. The police was unable to reach her on time. And instead, she was approached by a few men who then dragged her out of the car, assaulted her and her children, and raped the woman.
I'm right in saying, obviously, you say in your article that this is just one in hundreds and, in fact, thousands of cases of rape and sexual assault. In your article, you mentioned that in the last 8 months, there have been 2,100 cases reported. And you say that, obviously, many more, really sadly, go unreported. Why do you think this one had such an impact in terms of gaining people's attention?
I think it had a lot. These things generally have a lot to do with privilege. So we're talking about a woman that came from a comfortable background. She also had a French nationality, and as far as I know, she was visiting family in Pakistan. And then what really got it going was the way the media reacted as well. So you obviously, on the one hand, had influential family members who had the means and the privilege to talk about it on the media, to talk about it on social media, get a movement going. And then what really triggered the reaction was what the police officer in charge of the incident said. Because his immediate reaction was, she should have taken the other road. And so a lot of the backlash that you saw was to the way the police reacted. And that sort of got a lot of attention around the issue. And then, you know, people started getting into it. And there's actually, over the last month, been cases reported almost every day of sexual assault in the country. And a lot of people are questioning why these cases have gone up all of a sudden. But the thing is, when someone in a position of power opens a door, it opens a door to a lot of other stories as well. So that's what's been happening.
Sure. And you mentioned in the article two other examples, the example of Marwa, who was kidnapped and murdered. She was 5 years old. And Zainab, 2 years ago, 7 years old, the same thing happened to her. Asya, does it shock you anymore when you hear about these cases, how young these cases can be sometimes?
So living in like a Pakistani family living in England, we get most of our news like from relatives or from Geo News, which is sort of the they talk about Pakistani news in Britain. And the amount, it's really disheartening and awful, the amount you hear these kinds of cases over the years. And I've been alive for 20 years, and regularly throughout my life, my family has had heard these awful things, and we discuss them and think about what can change, what attitudes need to change so that we don't need to see these things happen. But it's sad that it becomes less and less shocking as you grow older, because these cases happen so often.
In terms of change, would you say that, you know, obviously you can't really remember like when you were literally like five, but in terms of like as you've grown up, have you noticed a change in sort of your like your circles or in the country in general? Or
yeah, I guess I think a lot of, maybe it's just because as I grew older, I became more aware of the world and was more involved in the conversations. But I don't know, especially when obviously Malala, everything that happened with her, that caused a lot of global conversation generally around women's rights in Pakistan. And so that has sort of sped up a lot of the changes, I think, although like Pakistani's perspectives of Malala might are slightly differing and controversial, but I definitely think that it's opened up a wider conversation within circles of British Pakistanis about what's happening back home and what we can be doing to change things and support our home country.
Ahan, what do you think that the impact of Malala has been in the last few years?
So Asya sort of spoke about how it is, how British Pakistanis perceive it. But I feel like in Pakistan itself, Malala is a really controversial topic. A lot of people like to have their own sort of like conspiracy theories about it and stuff like that. So people are really divided on it. But one thing for sure that's happened is it's opened up conversation. And I think that's been the most useful thing. Sort of the discussion around women's rights and women's education and how, you know, women need to be given an equal platform to men in society. So that conversation is definitely more there than it was before. But it would be pretty ignorant of me to say that it's a substantial amount. There's still not much being done, definitely more than before. And I think a lot of it has to do with social media. Social media's progress, you see more sort of stories coming up. More people are able to voice their opinions. More young liberals are able to sort of talk about women's rights, women's issues. So there has been more conversation around it. But in terms of the legal system or the justice system, I don't think much is being done in order to sort of facilitate women's rights, if I'm being very honest.
In terms of what you were just saying as well, this is more for Amla, I suppose, because you were talking about it in your article about how, you know, there has been change, but, you know, there are still attitudes that need to be combated. And you were saying how, although there was a lot of outrage on social media, there were also people who were agreeing with what the chief of police said, saying, you know, it was her fault, she should have taken a different road, and this sort of culture of victim blaming. And I wonder if you could just tell us a bit more about that, a bit about sort of the different voices in Pakistan and the different opinions that people hold.
So I think Ahan touched upon something very important with the fact that a lot of this conversation is happening on social media. And I'm sure you're all familiar with like the way you build your social media networks. You're sort of only engaging with often very like-minded voices. And that can limit growth, I think. But when you look beyond that, there are that's what's happened. You know, these bubbles have formed, and you see people thinking that they're right because that's what the bubble they know is saying. And within this specific context as well, that's what happens. So obviously, specifically with this case, you know, the CCPO made comments like, oh, we would never let our mothers and daughters, which itself is a very problematic statement, go out at this time. She was a French national. She thought this was France. And then there are people who will take this to the next level. They'll compare it to the Zeynep case and the Marwa case. And, you know, these young girls, often babies, that you hear of. And they'll say, oh, it's because... women are now exposing themselves and wearing such clothes, and it's because the culture is such that men feel the need to do this, or that they can't control their lust, or whatever reason that they give. So that's what the opposite side of the conversation then is. And I think because of the gap in social media, and often because of because you see in Pakistan there's a lot of class differences, so you won't see people beyond classes interacting. For example, I might be going off on a tangent here, but within schools, there's specific schools that stick within their own bubbles, and they often become very infamous for that. So you don't interact with other mindsets, and I often feel like that's the problem with a lot of young Pakistani liberals, in that they're talking to people who already agree with them. So it's very hard to get access to people who don't agree or who need to change that mindset, and they live within that circle as well. And because the mainstream media is still only covering what people like the CCPO say, that's what you have access to then. So you don't really get access to the liberal discourse unless you're already at a certain position of privilege.
Yeah. Can I just confirm, just for the listeners' benefit, to really highlight how firsthand some of these observations from some of you are, both Anmol and Ahan, you're both actually recording this episode. You both live in Pakistan, yeah. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, that really is amazing. Thank you so much for coming on, because obviously time differences and everything, it's really, really complex, and we really do appreciate it. Let's talk about the reaction to this specific incident for a moment. The Prime Minister, Imran Khan, the Prime Minister of Pakistan, actually called for these people to be publicly hanged. And Anmol, in your article, you actually disagree with this stance. You said that calling for such things distracts ourselves from our own complicity in a much more toxic and deeply ingrained rape culture within our own society. Why do you take that position?
So, you know, if I look at it personally from a woman's point of view, my immediate reaction to a rapist is, you know, capital punishment. And that's a very base reaction. But when you look at it from a larger perspective, you've seen people who are calling for public hanging to the point where Imran Khan even called for chemical castration of the abusers. But what that does is it still propagates a systematic violence. So you're not addressing the issue, because, you know, when someone, and so much in Pakistan comes back to privilege, so I'm going to keep coming back to this again and again, I think. When someone isn't in a position of power, when someone doesn't have political connections, when they don't have, when they're not from a certain economic background, it's very easy to dole out capital punishment. What about the people who are as involved? You know, when I look at it personally, the CCPO is as much to blame, because he's propagating the same culture, but yet he gets to be on the very investigation committee for the same case, assigned by that prime minister, and this prime minister is also calling for public castration. And that doesn't sit right with me, because you're not fixing the problem. You're just telling people that violence will always be the answer. So obviously, when you start questioning these things, you realize that rape culture lies so deeply below. And it's in a system like Pakistan, where it's so easy to throw a scapegoat under the bus, making something like public hanging normalized allows people to let other people take the fall for them. So you're still not questioning the people who have the most power and often the most to blame.
In terms of then finding a solution to the problem, what sort of solutions are being thrown around? Like, what are people suggesting? And where do you think this needs to begin? Where do you think we need to go back to? That's open for all of you, whoever would like to start.
I'll go. Well, I think that I agree both with Anna and Ayan when they're sort of talking about how we can get caught up in our social media bubbles. And I definitely, over the past couple of years, there has been a specific organization, that the Aurat March, they do a march every single year for women's rights in Pakistan. And whenever I saw sort of coverage of this on social media, it always was incredibly inspiring to see so many women from Pakistan, you know, gathering, standing up for their rights, and not just women, a lot of their relatives and stuff get, you know, fighting for women's rights. But you very quickly realize that this is just the tip of the iceberg. So I definitely agree with Amna when it's a case of trying to get education further out to people who won't be following Aurat organization on Twitter and won't be going to these marches, because they're currently Pakistan is very divided in terms of class, in terms of which groups mix with one another, whether that's like different religious minorities, etc. So I think sort of more opening up within the country, there needs to be a deeper structural change to get more people talking together and reaching different parts of society.
Yeah, I completely agree with Asia. I also feel like there needs to be, so you have Imran Khan talking about how, you know, the rapist should be publicly hanged or how he should be chemically castrated. But, you know, what are you doing? Are you going on the ground and talking to, you know, these women's groups like the Aurat March we spoke about, and, you know, asking them what really needs to be done, what their view is, talking to people who are less privileged? You know, the Aurat March, it is amazing. You know, it's inspiring. But a lot of the people that are part of the Aurat March are, like Anmol spoke about, in more of a position of privilege. That's why their voice is also heard. As the prime minister of this country, you need to speak to not only them. The first thing you need to do is speak to them, and not only speak to them, but also speak to people who are in a position of less privilege and see what their point of view is on this, how they're sort of, what they're going through. Secondly, I think Asia also talked about structural change, and I think structural change, a big part of that is your legal system, the laws that are in place. So the big issue is the sort of way the legal system deals with rape. I think, if I'm not mistaken, the first thing a woman has to do after she gets raped is report it. Like, that's necessary. She has to report it. Otherwise, you know, she loses her case, like her standing in court. That's one thing. And then there's also this this process called the, if I'm not mistaken, it's called the two-finger test.
Yep.
It's like some barbaric process where you check a woman's virginity, and it has nothing to do with rape. In fact, the World Health Organization themselves have sort of condemned it and said, you know, it's immoral, it's unethical, it makes no sense. But in Pakistan, you still have things like this being done. And then you have Imran Khan coming and saying, oh, chemically castrate them, like that is the solution somehow. You know, you need to be taking active efforts in your judicial system to make change. You need to be taking active efforts on the ground to make change. You can't take the easy way out. I can see why the whole hang the rapist thing was trending, and I can see how that's so appealing. But you have to also take a step back and realize that that's not the solution, you know? There needs to be change, and that really doesn't facilitate change. It's sort of like the easy way out.
And we keep, I think, rightly coming back to this issue of class so much. Obviously, I'm not expecting anyone to quote a load of statistics at me or anything, but do we think it's the case that being of a more wealthy class in Pakistan actually makes you physically safer? Do we think that being wealthier is sort of a protective ring around women in Pakistan? Anmol, do you think that's
so
the case?
On the one hand, you know, I could agree, because being wealthier means you're not exposed to public transport, you're not exposed to walking on the streets, you're not alone, you can afford security, you have your own car, you possibly have help to go out, do public chores for you, all of that. But then when you start getting into sexual assault, particularly in Pakistan, which is mainly what I know, you realize that a lot of it often comes from the people closest to you. And that's what's not reported as well. So especially within a lot of these women's groups, you see people reporting how their uncles assaulted them, their fathers, their brothers. And that makes you realize that there is no amount of privilege that can stop you from it. But what it does do to the assaulters is that it awards them a certain level of privilege. The reason that within this, the motorway case as well, why such a manhunt is going on is possibly because the rapist didn't come from a specific class or a wealthy economic background. Because within these families, when this happens, that whole family structure and the idea of like family respect and all of that, everything goes hush hush. So these men are never exposed.
So should we turn now to looking to the future slightly, beyond this event and the current situation? How do you think, Asya, let's start with you, how do you think this, the things that we see happening in Pakistan, this event and others, do you think that has any relevance to our experience here in the UK? Do you think there's anything more that the UK can do on the international stage?
I think it's difficult because obviously Pakistan and the UK are on two completely different levels of like how they approach women's rights and also like their judicial and legal system. And, you know, the UK, there's so much going on that I doubt that the government has it in its priority list. I think on a more sort of, other than, you know, condemning what's happened and sort of supporting the UN with on a wider level with helping with situation. But I think on sort of a ground level, British Pakistanis like to talk a lot of talk, and whenever I go to, you know, gatherings, they'll discuss Pakistani politics to a lot of length, and a lot of our relatives are still back in Pakistan and we have influence and we talk with them and we go and visit them. So I think that British Pakistanis need to hold themselves more accountable about what kind of attitudes we want to be supporting and what ones we want to be challenging. And instead of just sort of sitting on our sofas and discussing vague politics, we need to be doing more active efforts in our communities back home to be, you know, supporting them monetarily, supporting them ideologically, and just generally being more proactive. I think that's definitely something that we can do.
And also, in terms of being proactive, actually, this is a question for all of you. If people who are listening, you know, would like to learn more, to do more, to know more about this issue, you know, both globally and in Pakistan, would you have any recommendations of where to start, or how can people sort of get involved in the conversation and get other people involved in the conversation?
So one thing I would recommend initially is, especially when incidents like this happen, it's not a good idea to reach out to the groups that are most affected. So, you know, if you're thinking that some random Pakistani woman you know owes you an explanation of what's happened while she's probably dealing with a lot of trauma herself, she doesn't. But on that note, of where you can get help, there's a lot of organizations. Ihan spoke about the Aurat March a little bit, Asya did as well. They're great. You know, they have everything is pretty transparent with them. So they'll put out what they're demanding from the government. They'll often put out statements quite regularly, depending on what's happening in the country. For more digital social media related stuff, I've recently come across Digital Rights Monitor, Digital Rights Foundation. Both of them have regular magazines. You know, they hold webinars, talks. So again, age of the internet, it's really easy to get access to information no matter what part of the globe you're on. But then I would just be careful, as with, I think, any media, just make sure you're getting your information from a range of sources, because there is always an inherent bias in whatever you read. So try not to rely on one source too much.
Yeah, absolutely. And just before we finish off, Ahan, I'd love to get your perspective as a Pakistani man to some of the things that Anmol wrote and mentioned. You know, she quoted the famous words, boys will be boys. What is your experience? Obviously this discussion is about the victims, but what is your experience as a Pakistani man of the culture around sexual assault?
You know, the first thing I'd probably say is I'm embarrassed, probably ashamed, embarrassed. Like, there's so many words. Like, I don't think there's enough words to sort of express how bad the situation is. I mean, I'm looking at it from a position of privilege. Being a man, I have an automatic privilege and I have to recognize that privilege. Women in Pakistan, and I don't mean to speak on behalf of anyone, but the conditions for women in Pakistan right now, you wouldn't be able to know it unless you came here and saw it for yourself. Like, there are cases that happen every single day that we just don't hear about. You know, the mainstream media, your, you know, news sites, your television channels, they won't talk about half of the stuff because they prioritize sort of politics or things that are more trending. As a Pakistani man, I would probably urge all other Pakistani men to sort of recognize their privilege, firstly. That's the first thing. Get your act together, sort of go and talk to these organizations like Aurat March, help them out. Because if you have that privilege and you don't put it to good use, you're part of the problem. And I genuinely believe that. And yeah, I can't speak on behalf of any women, but you know, the situation is pretty horrible and not much is being done in Pakistan. And I think a big reason for that is because a lot of the people in power are men. We have a really sort of misogynistic patriarchal society and all the positions of power are mainly filled by men. And you can't expect, in Pakistan, men don't see how they're wrong, or they refuse. If it's about a man being wrong, he won't look at it. You know, he'll address all the problems in the world, but he won't correct himself. And I think that's the biggest problem.
And Anmol, I'd love to give the final word to you. If you could say one thing to the Prime Minister of Pakistan, Imran Khan, what would you say?
He needs to get his priorities straight, right, honestly. I mean, the kind of discourse that's been going around, he banned TikTok recently, he banned a web series. There is debate going on within the government on a biscuit ad, the rape and motor incident, and possibly millions of others in the country are still roaming free.
Good answer. Very good answer.
Well, thank you so much to all of you for being here today. I personally have learned loads. I don't know about you, Ollie.
Yeah, I've learned so much that me and Eve were saying this episode, we just wanted to let you guys really take the lead, just talk, say whatever you wanted, needed to say. And that's exactly what you've done. So thank you so much again for joining us from, you know, halfway around the world. Of course, Amal's article is still on the Meridian website. Women are not safe in Pakistan. Here's why. It's under the Asia section. So go and read that if you haven't yet. And yeah, thank you so much. We'll be back very soon with another episode.
Yes, hopefully. And who knows, maybe Corona related at this rate.
Oh God. Thank you so much. We'll see you very soon.
Bye.
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 Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye.